back to Troubleshooting Agile. Hi there, Jeffrey.
Hi, Squirrel. So, Squirrel, I was thinking about a pretty common experience I have in consulting, and I wanted to bounce it off you and see if you experience something similar. And the scenario is, in my consulting, I often come across people who are very frustrated, and they're in a particular way. They're looking at something that other people have produced after the fact, and then they're judging it, and they're saying, I can't understand. And it could be many different things. It could be an email to a client. It could be something that maybe there's been an outage and a root cause analysis, and they're looking at the mistake, and they're saying, I can't understand why anyone would do this. But what they're really saying isn't, I can't understand. What they're saying is, no one should have made this mistake. You know, after the fact, I've looked at it, and I just can't see that anyone could possibly do this, and this is the source of their frustration.
And I usually find that they haven't spent an awful lot of time trying to understand how someone could have done it. When you dig, it's very shallow. So there's not a lot of depth to that comment. It's just, I've looked at this for 10 seconds. It's obvious to me. Therefore, there can't be any good explanation for why they did it this way.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. It's the obviousness to them, and is the root of their disbelief. Not that they actually tried to understand how the situation came about. Is this something that it sounds like this is something you encounter as well? It's not just me.
Oh, certainly not just you, and I'm sure lots of our listeners do it, and I think I do it myself. And Jeffrey, I'd be surprised if you don't do it. It's this natural tendency to make use of I think it's Dave Snowden who came up with it. What you might call retrospective coherence. When you look at the situation after the event has occurred, a lot of organization, a lot of reification, a lot of clarification has happened, and so you can now see how things should have been. But it's because you have that structure, because the other people have failed, have done something unhelpful, have given you insight, they've done an experiment with a negative result, and that's been a successful experiment because it gave you a framework to work within. And I had a great example of this. I've had many, but one leaps to mind. A CEO of a business where he was involved in every element of it. And it was just amazing how many meetings he went to and how many activities he participated in, how much feedback he was giving. And I said, why on earth are you doing this much? He said, well, these people just really don't understand. I come along and I look at a design for our website, for example, and they haven't taken account of the most basic pieces of information. They haven't even collected the customer's address. And if we don't have their address, how can we sell them the next product? So I don't understand how they can ever not have thought of all these super important, wonderful things. And so I have to run around and tell them all the time. Now, there was an element there where he was enabling it. So he was training them to think that he was going to come and fix it for him. But that wasn't the root cause. That wasn't the original behavior. The original behavior came from him coming along after the fact, after someone had made a bad design, and then saying, well, it's obvious what the good design should be. And that's true. Anybody could do that. But the problem is you needed something that you tried on users, that you had a bunch of user research for, that you had gathered information about. That's what you needed to do first. And if he had come to it raw without that preparation, which never happened because he was the CEO, he never did the first version, then he would have had exactly the same difficulties.
Yeah, it's funny. You shared a really interesting article with me called Why Did We Wait So Long for the Bicycle?
Oh, yeah, I love this one.
And what's great about it is you look through it and it has a bunch of pictures of all kinds of designs of sort of proto bicycles. And they all look very funny because, of course, they look nothing like the
Jeffrey,
bicycle today.
They don't just look funny. They look stupid. You look at them today. There's one that you're sitting in a carriage. And I really encourage listeners to go to the show notes, not if you're driving or something like that. Pull over first, but look at these pictures because they're outrageous. I can't do them justice. But there's one where you're sitting in a carriage with four wheels and you're pulling on a rope, and the rope turns a cog, and the cog turns a gear, and the gear turns the wheels. And you can just imagine how hard this is on your arms, and how could this possibly look at all the weight and so on. And you say, how could any of this ever possibly work? There are others where you push yourself along with your feet. So imagine a bicycle that's a little, I guess it's lower than a normal bicycle that we have today, and your feet touch the ground, and you actually kind of walk along. How is this mechanically advantageous? How does this help you at all? It might help you going downhill. Uphill is going to be terrible. this is obvious now that we understand bicycles. It was absolutely non-obvious to all of these people who were very bright and very capable and came up with super ideas based on what they had. But we now have the retrospective coherence available to us. We can say we have a working model here, which certainly didn't look like it would work. The two I just described, obviously balance, right? You're not going to fall over. You look at the bicycle we have today, we all know you don't fall over when you ride it because we've learned to bicycle. Somebody from those times would have looked at it and said, well, of course, after you fall down and break your leg, maybe you'll be able to ride this somewhere. It was not obvious at all, but it certainly looks that way to us today.
Yeah, so you had a lot of tricycle bicycles and things like that. Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I hadn't seen that article before you shared it with me. What I had been thinking about was something that came up during COVID. And there's a Substack I follow by this guy named, he goes by the Zvi. And he was tracking COVID numbers week by week, and it was really interesting. He had much better predictions for what case numbers were likely to be than you'd get from, say, the official data, from, say, like the CDC, Centers of Disease Control. And there were some people who said, hey, look, oh, we should have Z, should be running, you know, the FDA or the CDC. And he wrote a really interesting article, this is a few years ago, and he said, you know, hey, that's a really bad idea for multiple reasons. But the important one for this is he said, well, of course my results are better because I get to build upon their work. And I think this is the key insight that I wanted to bring in. And I think it relates to the bicycle example. You know, when I come along and I judge someone's work after the fact, I get to build upon it. I should have a better result because I'm adding energy and work to something that's already created. It should be an improvement. And that's what he was saying, is like, I get to take everything the CDC has done as input and refine it. So of course it's better. You know, those people were effectively doing a different job. And if you think about what they were producing, they had a certain time budget. And if they were to spend the same amount of extra time that he was able to, maybe they would get an even better answer. We don't know, but that wasn't the case. And so this is the example I had in mind, is to remember when I come into a scenario and I'm looking at someone's work product and thinking, wow, this is crazy. Is that, you know, whatever problems they solved along the way, I get to take advantage of everything that they've already solved. So all the things that they've overcome, you know, that's the kind of, I think, the retrospective coherence you're talking about. Like, I have the advantage of looking back. Anything they solved, I can just accept and discount, and I can then only look for areas to refine. So that, I think, to recognize that in myself. I think the second question is, well, what do we do with this? If we come across things and we are that case of the CEO who's saying, oh my gosh, how come people didn't think of this? Like, what's the right way to approach other people to improve their performance in the future? It's probably not to have the mental model like, wow, these people are stupid. that's probably not going
to
be.
And I have to do everything
effective
for them.
Yes.
That's the model he had created and then reinforced and led them to believe. So that is very counterproductive. I think one of the things to do is certainly to look for what advantages do they have. You might just flip the script and think about, what are they better at than I am? What are they seeing that I'm not? If I were in their shoes, what couldn't I do? And your pandemic example is really good, because I have to imagine that those people in the Centers for Disease Control were taking in very confused, fractured, inaccurate pieces of data from the field, from overstressed doctors and nurses in overwhelmed emergency departments and so on. And they were taking those and converting them into some nice, raw, clean, accurate, or as accurate as they could, figures. And that's a skill. Your guy, and I don't know him, but the guy who was giving the better predictions, surely, I have to imagine, may not have been as good at that. That's a very difficult data cleansing skill. Whereas he's being like the data scientist, he's being like the investigator who comes along after the data has been cleansed and organized and put together and then says, ah, here's the pattern. Here's what's happening. Ah, you know, we're getting an outbreak in Maine or whatever it is. That would be a useful exercise, I think, for our listeners. The next time you hit a situation where someone really looks like an idiot, you're looking back at something they did and you say, boy, this looks dumb. Look for what's smart about it. What is the skill or the capacity or the ability that person demonstrated that might be valuable. Now, you might not find it. They might actually be dumb. That's always possible. But I think our bias is so strong, the retrospective coherence is such an attractive, alluring model to have, that intentionally looking for the alternative, looking for something where they were better than you, or better than you might have been, would be a very helpful exercise. What do you think?
I think that's great. I think the important part here is to, in thinking that not only are they might have things that they're good at and smart at, but they're overall, they're not dumb. To go back to the bicycle example, we take any of these inventors and teach them about modern bicycles. They're probably not going to stick to their old designs. I mean, they'll be accepting the new bicycle. So people are also teachable. So you have to also think, say, what is their, rather than thinking of them as incapable, I prefer to think of them as capable, but maybe there's something that we can, that I can bring a viewpoint that they hadn't considered, and that it's when we want to bring both their strengths and my strengths together to get a better result. And part of that is, you know, I can learn from them and they can learn from me. It's not the case that they're just, you know, inadequate and could never possibly make good work. And I think that's the real trap that people can fall into.
Makes perfect sense. And the last thing I'll suggest is a systemic one. This is why you mentioned retrospectives and postmortems and so on. That's one of the reasons those are supposed to exist, although people don't always take the advantage of it. The experiment with a negative result is a success. That's telling you something. There's value for the whole organization in knowing that, for example, a bicycle with a huge front wheel causes people to fall off and get hurt because you can't balance as well. And when you have learned that, then you know not to build asymmetric wheels anymore. You know that that is not the correct product direction. So one thing I was counseling some executives earlier this week to do is to look for those experiments, whether they're successful or not, and praise people for creating learning. And that's one way that they probably have some skills that you don't. And that's one way that they're getting value. And that's one of the pieces of value you can extract from whatever has happened with them, whatever their design is that might need new teaching. You can discover what that new teaching is by listening to the successful experiment with a negative result. That's what I tell a lot of my clients. How about you, Jeffrey?
I love it. Exactly. Looking for the ability to learn and making learning part of the process is definitely absolutely key.
If you're optimizing for learning, you're doing a lot better. Look, if listeners out there are inventing a better bicycle, or if you have a bunch of idiots around you and you really think that you're in the unique situation where they really are dumb, or if you disagree with us in some other creative way and you'd like to show us that we have made a successful experiment with a negative result, all of those are really interesting. We like it when people disagree with us, or if they just notice something interesting and want to point it out to us. We're very interested in any kind of response you might have, and the way to get that to us is to head on over to agileconversations.com, and there you can find not only our book and free videos from us and free materials for running your own conversational dojos and other exciting things, but also email and Twitter and probably five other ways of getting in touch with us that I don't remember. The other way, of course, to keep in touch is to come back when we're back again next week for another edition of Troubleshooting Agile. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Carl.